The Survivor tribe swap might result in you getting a raw deal, but you'll always get the best deal on Amazon.com, the best prices and selection on everything you need. And you get to help support Rob as a podcast when you start your shopping with our link, robasawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, it's robasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's a man who only has compared his prom to the tribal council from Survivor All-Stars, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. I'm very excited to have you guys back here. This should be a very fun show. I thought this was a really great episode of Survivor this week. A lot of intrigue surrounding the tribe swap, so much that we don't know, so many different ways that this possibly could go, and a lot of stuff to talk through, and that's why I'm very excited that we're going to have one of the smartest people, I think, out there to talk about this stuff. The great winner of Survivor South Pacific, Sophie Clark, is going to join me today. Pete and Abby Maria were scheduled to be the guest on the podcast this week. Pete had a family emergency. We're going to talk to them in a couple of weeks. But Sophie, a great friend, she came in at the last second, bailed us out, and very excited to have her here today. We're really spoiled. 2 weeks in a row having people that really, really know their stuff on the recap show and talking about it all with us. So very excited for that. Of course, last night we had the know-it-alls, and it was really, really strong know-it-alls last night. Check that out if you missed it. That's one that I would really recommend you go back and watch if you didn't see that. And then had our exit interview with Anna this morning, all at robasawebsite.com. And of course, voicemails with Angie Kontz coming up next podcast after this one. But first, let's get into it. Let's bring in our guest for the show today. Very excited to have this person back, as you guys know. Even though she recently posted all of the podcasts that she is subscribed to on her Twitter feed, and Rob Has a Podcast was not among them. Welcome back, somebody who I even recently said should be included in the RHAP Mount Rushmore, the winner of Survivor South Pacific, the great Sophie Clark.
Oh, man, Rob, what a terrible introduction. I feel so bad. Look, I want to explain myself, actually. Those are the podcasts that I subscribe to that I get downloaded every week. There are also select podcasts that are like super special podcasts where I don't want every episode, but I just want to select specific episodes. And so I will prove to you with a screenshot that Rob Has a Podcast is in that category of the like, I don't need to hear like Abby every single week whenever she's on, you know?
Yeah.
I don't need like the way back in Survivor history stuff. Like when an interesting thing comes up, I will press download on a specific episode. And so like I curate my Rob Has a Podcast
experience. You're casual is what you're saying.
No, I'm saying that I'm like, I'm so invested in Rob Has a Podcast that I want to be very specific about the kind of episodes I choose. Whereas the other podcasts I listen to, I'm non-discriminatory. Believe me, it's a better thing to be in your position.
Yeah. In fairness, also, somebody recently calculated that the great Mikey the Chimp put out an infographic that I believe we did over 8 hours of podcasting on last week's Survivor episode. So I can understand. It's not for the faint at heart.
That would double my podcast listening right there. So,
okay. Anyway, Sophie, thank you very much for coming in here at the last minute. I truly appreciate it, just both as a friend and to have such a great guest to come on with me. So thank you very much for that.
No problem. I was very excited to get the call. I'm always nervous that if somebody doesn't drop out, I might not be able to actually do a podcast with you. So
No. Well, last season we didn't do it.
Glad to get a slot.
You were spoiled last season.
That's true. That is true.
So that's why we didn't do it
Remember that one season where you did like two with Aris?
Yes. Well, what happened was that I had a podcast booked with a Survivor that time. And then Aris was the guy I went to. And then his condition was, well, I'll do it, but then you have to have me do another one.
I would make that condition only because I want to beat Aris, but I don't really think I want that condition.
Aris was good last week. So you're coming, you're following up after him, and he did a really good job.
Oh man.
Yeah.
You're doing a string of winners, eh?
Yes. String of winners. and that string is going to continue next week. But, Sophie, let's talk about this, very fun episode. Now, on Survivor South Pacific, you guys did not have a swap, and I think that probably served you well, considering that you were the winner. Do you have any sort of feeling about tribe swaps that you guys didn't have one? Does that make you look at tribe swaps any differently?
So, as a In my position as a player, I really hated any kind of variability. And so the variability we had, we didn't have a tribe swap, but we had Redemption Island. And for me, that was like the thorn in my toe or whatever the saying was, because you could never be comfortable knowing that somebody could come back into the game. I imagine being on a three-type season is similar to that, in that at any moment, you know, this perfect plan that you have laid out might be kind of immediately foiled. That said, I think it was last episode. I don't know who said it. Actually, it was something that Julia said that made me think about this. Was Julia mentioned how she was put alone on one of, she was alone on that Braun tribe. And she said, I think she said this, maybe it was in a secret scene. She said, it's terrible. It sucks. Like, I'm miserable, but like going through this gives me the opportunity to prove myself. It's something to put on my resume at the end to say, hey, I overcame this. I'm the youngest person in the game. And, I lived alone on an island. And I think that one of the things that I struggled with both in my game and after my game defending my game is that I didn't actually have to face a lot of adversity in getting to the end. And I think that a tribe swap actually, it gives somebody an opportunity to kind of make a move and to prove themselves in some way. And sometimes that opportunity can just come to you. And sometimes you have to make that opportunity. And like an example of when it would come to you would be, when you're like Malcolm or Denise, I think that happened to them. Or, mm-hmm. When you're the odd person out and you're forced to wiggle your way out. I was never put in that position. And then the opportunity can also come to you with, somebody like Ty, who's not necessarily forced to be in a bad position, but kind of uses the change in the game to his own advantage. So I think things like merges and kind of small infusions of kind of chance into the game, they can either, swing one way where it's Anna and she's out, or they can swing the other way and really allow somebody like to shine and to add something to their resume.
I'm glad you brought up the specter of Redemption Island, because we talked about this last night with Steven about how it was kind of like Exile Island, this twist that they ended up making. But yeah, I think maybe Redemption Island might be the better example of what this is like, because you have to factor in, just like you guys had to, Christine could come back into the game, or eventually it was going to be Ozzy who came back into the game. How is that going to affect the dynamics, and what person should we vote out next? Because this person is going to be coming back into the game.
I totally agree with you. I think it's a very Redemption Island type situation. And I think that was especially true when, if you think about Ty and his move, whether or not it was a good move or a bad move, I think a lot of people have landed. I think Steven landed on the side of thinking that was a good move. He made the right move in the right situation. He keeps his idol. But if you think of, Julia being on Exile Island as kind of like Julia being on Redemption Island as this kind of lottery player in the game, in my mind, I took very much the Redemption Island view to it of Ty should be doing whatever he can to keep his relationship with Julia, who is now going to, just like Redemption Island, re-enter the game. And so I think that that's something that, he played in the moment, but I actually think that he really should have looked kind of further and looked at the long game and looked at kind of what's going to, what is the next step, which is Julia coming back into the game. And I'm a little nervous that he will have like severed his relationship with Julia by kind of like, in a way, backstabbing her friend.
But do you think that she's going to get the full download of how events went down, where that to Julia, who comes back into the game? Yeah. I mean, only Scott is the other person that has that information. I can't see Scott giving Julia that sort of download of, Ty, well, he had an idol. He could have saved Anna. He chose not to. That was really not a good friend.
I think you might be right that maybe there's not so much downside with what Ty did, but I think that there could have been a lot of upside. And sure, he would have had to sacrifice his idol, but the upside is that he's then on the tribe with Julia and Anna. They have the majority, right? They would have had the majority if they'd voted out a brain. And they have a majority on the other side that they would then, reconvene with at the merge. So sure, maybe not that much of a downside, like in the short term for doing what he did, but I think he had a chance to really bring the numbers behind him and he didn't. That said, Ty is not like a pawn in this game. Ty has a personality and Ty is playing to his strengths, and, he might not be very close with those girls. And so having a huge numbers advantage with three beauty girls might not have been his best play. And second, he seems like somebody who can really get along with other people without being unthreatening. And so making alliances that kind of are cross-cutting across tribes, with Scott, and with Aubrey, might have been the best move for him. But I do think that he may have, you know, sacrificed the chance to really kind of sacrifice his idol in order to, you know, really push the beauty tribe ahead.
So over at Upolu, you guys had the hidden immunity idol. Coach had the hidden immunity idol, but it wasn't ever solely something that was in your possession. Do you feel like philosophically that you would be somebody who would play the idol if there's any chance? And I know I've said that a lot on the podcast of I'd rather play it and be wrong than go home with it in my pocket. But I just feel like that I would side with Ty and Scott's decision to hold on to it just because it's so early in the game and you really just don't know. Like, is it worth it to spend that capital in the game on Anna just to save her when for Ty that there is a viable plan moving forward without her?
Yeah. So, I mean, you're right. I didn't get to interact much with idols on my season. I was very afraid of idols. I was afraid of them being in the game. And I was afraid of even owning one in a way, because I was afraid what other people, like how they would respond to that. If they would suspect that I own one, if they would be afraid that I own one. And this is like a theme that I've been thinking about, especially like through watching the episode, which is like how important it is, like not just to have self-awareness, it's a step beyond that, but it's like how important it is to control other people's perceptions of you. And so I think in that vein, if I had an idol, I would want to, as much as possible, let other people think that they are still in control and still totally understand me and my game. And for that reason, I think I would play the idol immediately. And I would say, oh my God, I found this idol today and I'm playing it today because I'm terrified. I think my fear would be being in a game, having an idol, and, you know, not being sure if other people thought I had one or not. Because I think the time when you really have the upper hand in Survivor is when you make other people around you believe that they have the upper hand. And I think tons of people are doing that right now. I mean, I think that like Ty did it in a way by like sharing his idol with Scott, right? He like, you know, now he controls Scott's perception of him. He knows that Scott thinks he's like a nice guy who shares secrets. And I think Debbie's doing it as well. You know, like Debbie, like if you watch the secret scene last night, there was a scene with Debbie and Neil where like Neil was kind of like telling her what to do. And Debbie later says off camera, like, he's such a jerk. Like, you know, I know what I'm doing. Like I'm observing everything. And so I think these people who are in the best position are people who are able to like appear transparent, whether that's by sharing an idol or by kind of controlling other people's perceptions of them, while also being self enough aware enough to understand, you know, where they're fitting into the tribe.
Now, what you're saying about the idol, how you would play it right away, I mean, is that influenced by what happened last season with Steven and the advantage in the same way where everybody felt like Steven had the advantage and that turned him into a much bigger threat at that point in time? Or that is that always how you felt about that sort of thing?
I mean, that's always how I felt. And I don't think that Steven is the only example, right? Like you can, whether or not they have the idol or they don't have the idol, I think that people are really afraid of the unknown on Survivor. And they're also willing to very quickly rally around fear, right? It's like Donald Trump. And so I remember before I went on my season, I saw Redemption Island and the same thing happened, right? Weren't the first couple days in Redemption Island them saying that Christina was off looking for the idol?
Yeah,
and that caused people, to rally around her. And honestly, that's the reason, you know, we voted out Christine on my season. Same thing. She went off away by herself once. And the easy thing to do was to say, wow, let's assume that she has the idol. And so, I mean, I think that I think it's really important to make sure that you understand other people's perceptions of you and that you control them. And I think that if you go off looking for the idol, you better damn well have it and you better damn well share it with somebody or play it because they're going to assume that you do. So if you're going to like put yourself in that position, like you better have it or else you're just screwing yourself over.
Well, let's talk through what Ty ultimately did last night. Because with Steven on the know-it-alls last night, I felt like I did not think that Ty played that particularly well. And then I felt like it was Scott Pollard who came to him and said, hey, man, what are you doing? Like, she's going to get voted out. Yeah. Like, don't waste your idol here. But by doing that, he ended up getting her to stop throwing him under the bus. So could you just talk it through as far as Anna went in the game? How do you think that she handled that whole situation? Did you feel like that she did something that was particularly wrong or she was just somebody who was very unlucky in that circumstance for not worried about the tribe swap just yet?
It's hard to like not play. What is it called? The second day quarterback? Or
Monday morning quarterback.
But there's football every day. Okay. It's hard not to play Monday morning quarterback on this, right? Because like, obviously now looking back, I can there's probably one solution for her, right? That like maybe gets her the answer. And that is going to other people on the tribe other than Scott and saying, hey, Ty has an idol. Like he showed it to me. He showed it to Scott. Like we got to vote about and getting, rallying around people who want to flush an idol. And like maybe even confronting him at tribal about it to like, you know, have him squirm and have people believe it so they don't think she's lying. That said, I think that to me, that's like the solution. And Anna was in a shitty position, but like that's the only solution. And the question I have to like, to kind of rate how good her game is would be, that's only the solution she should have taken if she didn't trust Ty that much, right? Like if she really was close with Ty, then she's blindsided. But honestly, I have a feeling like she was in an all girls alliance. Like she and Ty were not the closest people. I think she probably should have been a little more suspect of him given it was a him or her type situation and maybe, you know, aggressively, thrown him under the bus before he threw her under the bus. I mean, I have to believe that if Tony was in her situation, Tony would have taken control and put the games in his own hands, right? He wouldn't have been like, oh, Ty's going to play my idol for me. He would have said, oh, Ty is an idol. Like, who cares if he plays it for me or not? Like, let's screw him over. And I think that Anna, you know, let it come to her a little bit.
But isn't that such a exception where it's like to say that one of the most perceptive survivors in the history of the game, if he was in that position, like, aren't you, isn't that such a tall task to compare Tony to somebody that, you know, is playing the game? And this is her first tribal council ever.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. I think you're right. But Tony is definitely a unique breed.
Let me tell you why I didn't have a problem with what Anna did, because I think that she did have the right read on everything. And I think that she was totally expecting Ty to play the idol. And I think that Ty would have played the idol. I think that the wild card for her was that she doesn't know Scott Pollard from anything. And she doesn't know that Scott Pollard is in his ear and saying, hey, don't do this. I don't think that Ty changes his mind. Yeah. I think if she's just controlling Ty, or if she's there with Ty, she has a good read on him from, you know, 9-10 days or whatever together.
Yeah.
So she kind of knows how he's going to play it. But what she doesn't know is that wild card of Scott Pollard in his ear telling him what to do. And from my exit interview, she says that this all happened about, you know, 30 to 45 minutes before they ended up going to tribal council. So there's not really a lot of time to maneuver.
Yeah. And you're right. You know what? You're right. It's unfair of me actually to say that she had a better move, because I also said that Ty made the wrong move. Mm-hmm. And so if I think Ty made the wrong move, then Anna probably was also thinking to herself, what is Ty's best move in this situation? And Ty's best move was to play the idol, gain the numbers, get Julia back in the game and have the three of them. And I have to believe that Anna also saw that and couldn't see this other situation where Ty would want to go down numbers in beauty, like expose his idol to somebody else without playing it, right? Like it truly is a risk that Ty took in this game. And I think it's a risk that only will make sense if Ty truly is kind of the social mastermind he seems to be, that he can win people over and he doesn't need to kind of, you know, stay loyal to this beauty alliance.
Now, when you call him a mastermind, though, doesn't that imply that there is some sort of like underhandedness to him? Isn't he just a likable guy? Do you think that there's some sort of strategic, oh, I'm going to win this person over by doing this or making this person laugh? I just kind of feel like that's who he is.
No, maybe mastermind is the wrong word, but I would call him a brilliant social player. And I think there's like three kinds of social players, right? You have somebody who's, you have somebody who's social, and that's like, maybe, I don't want to say Natalie White, because I think she gets a lot of flack. But if somebody who's just like nice and social, give me an example of like a nice person.
Just a nice person that's out there.
No, Julia. Let's say Julia. Julia, sure, right? She seems like she's a social person. No, she's not going to get to the end and people are going to say she's a bitch, unlike some people we know. So Julia is like a social person, right?
Yeah.
I would say there's like a social mastermind, which is the wrong word I used previously. And a social mastermind, I think, is a little bit of a negative context. And it's somebody who is like overly like trying to manipulate social situations to the extent that it's transparent. And I would put Albert in that category for my season. And I would put Peter in that category for my season. And it's people who see people as pawns and say,
Your season or Peter from this season?
Sorry, Peter from this season. And it's the people who see people as pawns and say, oh, I'm a doctor. I'm going to now like open up the Peter clinic and that's going to make everybody like me because it makes them feel good, right? It's like a very transactional social contract that doesn't work. And I think the best social players are people like Ty and people like Parvati. I'd put her in the same category. And this is people who, yes, they're nice and they're like Julia and they, you know, they're obviously social people, but they have the self-awareness to understand how it is affecting their game and how it can further them. And the reason I think I put Ty in this category is he had some confessionals. I don't know if secret scenes or non-secret scenes where he was being really nice, greeting them and welcoming them into camp. I think this is a secret scene. But in his confessional, he said, you know, people like nice people. Like, he has this awareness that he's not just being nice. He's not just like, it's not just part of his personality that he recognizes. He also recognizes that how it affects other people and how it will further him in the game. So I don't think it's just like a core part of his personality. I think he's using it also.
I don't know. For me, I still don't necessarily see a difference between the first thing and the category that you're putting Ty in. I certainly see it with Parvati, but I haven't heard Ty say anything where, you know, I really don't like this guy, but it's in my best interest to get this person to like me. And so, I mean, he did say he didn't like Peter, but we didn't see him really going out of his way to be nice to Peter, even though he didn't like him. I mean, he seemed to really like Beast Mode Cowboy. He seems to really like Scott Pollard. I just need to see him say that there's somebody he doesn't care for and then be that same likable person and win over that other person. And again, and maybe Peter is the example. I just feel like we didn't see a lot of evidence of that so far.
Yeah. I mean, but we did see, I agree. We're not sure if he does it to people he doesn't like, but he definitely is aware of how it's furthering his game for people he does like. Like, even with the whole Caleb thing, right? Mm-hmm. The whole kissing thing. For him, that was being fun, but he had some self-awareness about it in his confessional later where he said, I can't remember exactly what he said, but he said, you know, like, you know, it's, I can tell he likes it. To me, I just felt like Ty is commenting on his own kind of social game in a way that like Julia is not, right? He's like totally aware of how this is furthering him in the game. And like, I think the answer is like, obviously he must dislike people, but like, I can't imagine a world in which Peter is not totally charmed by him, right? I think in a Peter in a secret scene, he was talking about like how wonderful the camp is and how welcoming everybody is. So I like Ty, right? Ty is like,
I mean, who wouldn't love Ty? I mean, he's so likable and so easy to root for. I think that what we're still trying, and it's only 5 hours into this season, is that, and hopefully we have an answer by the end of this, like just how much of this is I am playing a character, or how much of this is I am exactly completely authentic and this is who I am. I think it's going to be a fun story to follow as we go along. You know, I'm glad that you made the comparison between Peter and Albert, because I definitely did see that as well. We got some questions about that. He's almost like Albert's dad, right?
Yeah.
Probably the age differences doesn't really make sense, but he does have that same sort of, you know, Albertness to him.
He does. Albert probably would not be so into Peter. Albert is not an Obama fan. I can't imagine he's anybody who looks like Obama fan.
Oh.
I wonder if Albert's a Trump fan. Oh my God, we should figure that out.
I don't know. I think he's down in Marco Rubio territory, but I guess Trump won Florida, so I guess who knows.
Yeah, but Albert's Cuban. Interesting. That'd be interesting to know. Wow. Somebody should find that out.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think there's a lot of similarities, right, between Peter and Albert. The ones that are obvious that I'm sure everybody else has noticed is just like kind of the ego. But I have to give Albert some credit. I don't think his ego is half as big as Peter's. Mm-hmm. But also just like the assumption that he is in control, right? And I think that can come. I think that can come whether or not you have an ego or not. But like, the assumption that you have control and the assumption that like you can see the other players as pawns, right? Like the way Peter talks about his tribe is not in the people sense. It's the like, oh, like we're the pretty people and then there's everybody else. And it's like, it's the same kind of stuff that Albert did. I can't think of any other. I mean, it's mostly just the way that he kind of relates to the other people in his tribe that I see the similarity.
So how do you feel like somebody like this is going to be able to move on? Because it seems like unless, you know, Joe just completely turns on him at this next upcoming vote, which I guess is certainly a possibility, it seems like he is going to be somebody who is not going to be a major target for the other people that are trying to take out the Brains tribe. He seems like he's very clearly on the outs. And then he's also somebody who is potentially going to have some be able to maybe, like Albert, go to the end and maybe get no votes. Are you feeling like Peter is going to be in this for a while?
I don't think so, right? Peter's move now is to like betray the Brains, right? Mm-hmm. Like his move is to flop. And I just think he's not likable enough. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that even if he flops, like he'll be used for one vote and then like voted out. Cochran was used like for many votes and kept in because he was likable and everybody felt bad voting him out. Mm-hmm. Like Peter is like not a, I don't think it's somebody that you're going to like want to draw into your alliance, right? I feel like he's a bit of a like kind of a flopping like a flopping fish right now. Like I think that now like he's been, you know, now that his like legs have been taken out from under him, like he doesn't fit in with the brain. He's trying to be like cool with them, but he's still kind of an asshole. All the other people think he's an asshole. Yeah. The other people are wigged out by him. Like, I just actually don't see a place where he can make a move in the game. And I think that because of the three times situation, there's not going to be like a simple flop happening, right? It's not going to be like, oh, Peter goes to the other side and that gets the numbers. So I don't even think he has a place to like integrate himself with other people. I think he's screwed.
Yeah. And I know this is typically the opposite of what I would say, but I felt like he was going to flop coming into this tribe swap. But I actually feel like the way that it broke for him to end up being with basically like in a point where Joe and Aubrey need him, I actually think the move for him is not to flop. And, you know, in secret scenes, Joe is talking about how the brains are trying to, you know, stick five together. And I'm sure that'll work out fine. But it seems like that they are, you know, they don't look at him as somebody we have to get rid of right now. They're still looking at him as part of that core group. So maybe down the road, he could be that person who ends up being the last person left from the brain. So I actually think that he's in a spot where he could end up having some longevity, as long as he can sort of like keep things civil with Aubrey and Joe, who don't seem to love him. I was really surprised when they said to him last night, like, all right, we're going to go talk about this now, Peter, you hang out. And he went back and he's like, yeah, so we're voting off one of you guys tonight. Like he wasn't even like going back to Ty and Anna and trying to say like, boy, you know, I'm just going to let you guys know, you know, I'm open to whatever you want to do. So
I honestly think that his experience in the brain tribe and also almost being voted out, I think that his response to that is going to be to like grovel to the brains for the rest of his days. And that's been evidenced by this last episode. If he was truly pissed and ready to like flop, he could have done it in this situation, even though it was weird numbers, like he could have done it. I think the fact that he didn't is proof that he's just going to spend the rest of his days like trying to integrate himself with the brains, like not having the balls to make a move because he kind of tried to do that in the brains and got screwed over. Like I almost feel like he's playing his second chance survivor right now, which is like, shit, I almost got voted out. I need to like recorrect in a huge, you know, too big of a way. And now I'm going to like grovel with the brains and like, that's not going to get me anywhere. Yeah. I kind of feel like he's no longer an entity in the game.
We'll see. We'll see. I think that he still has some more story to his game. I want to ask you about Aubrey because now she's somebody who in the preseason went back and said that I am the love child of Sophie and Cochran. And I think she's been somebody that we haven't talked about very much through four episodes. A little bit that episode where Liz got voted off, who is a newly minted member of the Wine and Cheese Alliance, correct?
Yes.
She has taken the initiation ritual. That's official.
Yes.
Okay. So we talked about Aubrey a little bit there in this episode, but I think that Aubrey is somebody who's in a very good position in the game right now. And I really think that she has some daylight in front of her where I just don't see anybody coming for Aubrey at any point in the near future. Talk to me about what you've seen from Aubrey and if you think that she has any bit of Sophie Clark actually in her, not just in her bio.
Yes, I will. I'm not sure how much of Cochran I see in her, but I do see a lot of myself in her. And I think this is a little bit of like, she's in a similar position that I was in, I think, where she knows what other people's perceptions of her are and they are underestimating her. And I think on the brain tribe, it was because like Liz and Peter thought they were the hot ones and like Aubrey wasn't in that group. So they could like tell her, you know, what to do. And in the beauty tribe, when she joined, I don't know if it was in a secret scene, you noticed that like, I think it's secret scene. Anna talks about like how of all the people she's merged with, like she thinks Aubrey's one that she could really be friends with. And so I think Aubrey has this, you know, luck of this, you know, the first player luck. I think Aubrey has it. I think Debbie has it. I think Cindy has it because she's not telling people about her Ivy League education, right? These people are all in these great situations where they're being underestimated and people think they have a peg on who Cindy is and that she's from Atlanta. And guess what? She like went to an Ivy League school and she's really smart. And they think they have like their finger on what Debbie is and she's kooky. And guess what? No, she like really knows what's going on. And I feel like Aubrey's in a situation where they like have their finger on Aubrey and they think that she's like kind of like a sweet nerd. And like maybe like not going to cut you. And somebody that they can, I see like Aubrey as like the little sister type on this tribe and like it's like the best friend in the chick flick. Right. And like nobody, and I, And I think that that's a position that I was in, right? I was in that position with Coach and with Albert, where they saw me a little bit as a sidekick, and they never expected that I could be so like cutting. And I remember towards the end of the game, there was a little, like Albert started to freak out about it. And like, even at Final Tribal Council, where you see me called Coach a little girl, there's this look of shock. Like, who is this person that we thought was like so not threatening in our sister, who is like totally not who we thought she was? And I feel like Aubrey's in that, and Cochran was in that position too in his second tribe, right? Like, everybody thought that they were like friends with Cochran, who really needed a friend because he's socially awkward. He doesn't know how to open a coconut. And so they were all like thinking they were doing Cochran a favor. And guess what? Like, Cochran was ready to cut them. And so I feel like Aubrey right now is this like kind of like, sit, like, what's an animal that like kind of like sits and like waits and like ready to pounce, right? She's like this like sweet cat, but like everybody's like kind of petting and like putting on their lap, and she's like gonna take the claws out and pounce on somebody. And you can just tell, like, she even has this mannerism about her in her confessionals where she is like kind of reserved, but like has energy that's like coming from within. I know I'm getting a little kooky right now.
This is interesting to talk about, because I feel like with both you and Cochran, I definitely can see this sort of thing where both of you in your confessionals would be talking about how, you know, people perceived you a certain way, but we'd hear in the confessional, you'd be talking about like, oh my God, like Coach, this idiot, Albert, who even knows what he's talking about? He's getting on my last nerve. I want to get rid of him. Cochran certainly would do that. You know, he gave the impression that he was very interested in people, but then he was extremely cutting and dismissive of people in his confessional. But from Aubrey, I haven't seen that. And I'm not saying that she doesn't have that gear, but I almost feel like that Aubrey, until I see it, I can't just say that she is going to develop this. Same thing with Ty. Like, isn't it possible that Aubrey is just a nice person who's in a very good position?
I see it in Aubrey. Remind me, what part did Aubrey have in the Liz vote out?
That she was somebody who she really did not, and it seemed like that she was pushing for Peter more, if my memory serves me, that because he was being arrogant, and she didn't want to put up with his personality, and the same sort of thing where I think she felt like she got along better with Anna than Ty in that spot. And she seems like she has a very good relationship with Joe. She has a very good relationship with Neil as well, I would imagine, with Debbie. Seems like Peter gets on her nerves a little bit, understandably. But I think that she's a very smart player, but I just don't know if she has that, is she willing to shank somebody if necessary? Yep.
So I think you're right. I think that I see in this game a ton of like really savvy listeners, right? Like Ty is a listener, and Sydney's a listener, and Aubrey's a listener. And like maybe even, you know, Scott, Debbie, like, you have all these people who are sitting and observing, and they're super observant. If you watch their secret scenes, like, Aubrey knows what's going on. And I think you're right that the question is, who is going to pounce? And I think we saw Scott today, like, kind of pounce a bit, right? And I think the question is, like, can Sydney pounce? Can Aubrey pounce? Like, Debbie, obviously, like, she sat back and observed, and then she pounced. She did Liz. And so I think you're right. Like, we've yet to test Aubrey to see if she's going to like use all this, like, in Debbie's word, this intel that she's gathering, and like put it to good use. But I certainly see, like, I think people complain a lot on Survivor that there's like passive people in the game. I think that there's a lot of people right now who I wouldn't call passive players, because I feel like they are gathering intel, and they have like the ability to pounce. And I think the question is like, who's going to do it?
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that Aubrey can't do it. I'm just saying that I haven't seen the evidence
yet. I think that's fair.
That it's coming. And also, the other thing about Survivor, which is very important, is just because you're not ready to do it on day 10 doesn't mean you're not ready to do it on day 30, that there is a big growth curve. And I know that she is somebody who's very well educated in the game. And maybe, you know, you sort of see the writing on the wall at that certain point in time. But I do feel like that she's in one of the best positions of the Brains tribe people, because I feel like that if there is some sort of a battle of some sort of either brains versus beauty plus brawn that comes, I think that she'd be one of the last people, especially post-merge, that ends up having the target on her back.
I think you're right. And I think that she is, because of her quality as like seeming like a friend or a sister, I think she's somebody who could kind of integrate herself into the beauty, like the girl beauty alliance, which to me seems like a force that's going to happen in the game. I can see herself, her integrating into that and kind of figuring it out and kind of maybe making a move there better than, say, Neil can, right? Like, yeah. I think that she's going to be somebody they're going to like be willing to work with a little more.
And something else that I think is really important about her, and I think that this is something that you probably have in common with her, is I think she's somebody who's really good in the challenges, who maybe unlike Sydney, who you look at her and like, okay, well, I got rid of her. She's really good in the challenges. I think that she is deceptively good in the challenges.
Yeah, I think that's true. I'm so fascinated to see what's going to happen in the individual immunities, right? I don't think there's necessarily somebody, like there's no Joe, right? There's no Ozzy. Like those are the people who have this amazing combination of just like kind of MacGyvering, good at everything. Right. And sure, you have Sydney and you have Scott, but like, I don't think those are going to, I mean, I feel like somebody like Neil could go on a challenge run. And I'm not sure who it's going to be yet. Like it's, I don't think that person's emerged. And I think Aubrey could be a contender. And right, this is the way she has similarities with Cochran. Like he did the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Could have been Beast Mode Cowboy.
Yeah, no, it would have been. Oh my God.
I saw on Twitter, you loved Beast Mode Cowboy. And now, Sophie, I know you like Big Brother. Were you a Beast Mode Cowboy fan from Big Brother?
No, I was not. He won me over. I wouldn't say he won me over. Like I, as a viewer of Survivor, I thought he was good television and he seemed like a very pleasant person to be on an island with. Do I want to be Beast Mode Cowboy's best friend in real life? Well, I think I'd have to do a little bit of more investigating, but you know, but I will say like, he had some of like Brandon Hance's best qualities in him, which is just kind of like lighthearted and jovial and makes a lot of jokes. And you could just tell that he was making the situation on the Beauty Tribe better. And people say that in their, you know, they've all said that in their confessionals after he left. And you know, I just love the, like the energy he brought to the challenges. I wish we got to see like more of what his strategy might've looked like, but I am all for, you know, Beast Mode Cowboy coming back.
Yeah, I do think that Survivor was just the superior vehicle for him than Big Brother, which Big Brother is a lot of downtime, 90 days, you know, we're following you 24/7, you know, there's going to be a lot of more opportunities to find the flaws in a person there, whereas Survivor, we're seeing only a couple minutes a week, those high highs, which he can get to like in the challenges and, you know, really like going out there and doing something, you know, heroic, doing a backflip off a boat. Those are the kind of, like, you're not getting that on Big Brother. Yeah. And, you know, in a couple minutes on Survivor, that is really the, you know, the spot for him on these shows.
Well, I would even say that maybe Survivor should really think about like their casting techniques, because I know that they were very reluctant to put Beast Mode onto the show. And if I think about like the ways that the, like the Big Brother cast is different from the Survivor cast, like one, obviously they're way trashier, but two, like they kind of have like higher energy, right? Because they need that to like propel the show. They're like alone, bored in a house. Like there needs to be some energy. Whereas Survivor, I feel like they look for more like kind of complex personalities and maybe a little bit less on the energy side. But when I think of some of the like the most fun people to watch on Survivor, like they really are the high energy people. Like, you know, I'm going to say Tony again, because Tony's amazing. But Tony and Mike and Beast Mode Cowboy, and I'm sure there's some women in this category that I'm forgetting. Abby. And these are all people I think that if you thought about what the BB, you know, Survivor crossover would look like, these people are like the closest to that line. I personally would love to see a little more trash on Survivor and see what happens.
You know, I did a podcast with Eric Stein before the season started of people that were from Big Brother that probably could get brought to Survivor and do well. And I really do think that there is something about sort of like these alpha male big personalities that always go into the Big Brother house and probably 80% of the time come off really bad in that small fishbowl that is Big Brother, that it's just like they're too big for the house. Whereas on Survivor, I think a lot of those people might have a much different story and end up, even though they might have been seen as a villain or unlikable on Big Brother, that if you put that same person on Survivor, I wonder if they would come off as being somebody who's more of a hero in that story.
I think you're totally right. I think that 1 year Survivor and Big Brother should just choose an old cast and just like swap them, or not even do that. Just put like have a Survivor season with all Big Brothers and a Big Brother season with all Survivors.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that.
I mean, the people that do well on Big Brother, I mean, we've had like, you know, the Ians and Steves, and I mean, we had Cochran certainly win on, you know, a season, mm-hmm. but I think that maybe the all-star factor of the Survivor Karamo and maybe, you know, change the dynamic a little bit there. But I do think that, you know, those types of guys typically do not do great on Survivor, whereas on Big Brother, you know, which is a little bit more of a, you know, sitting around talking to people, and the games are trivia, you know, that's, you know, the immunities. But okay, I don't want to digress too far into that.
I love Big Brother, Rob. I love it. I saw I follow Hamster Feed on Twitter, and I noticed that they announced the premiere date for Big Brother.
Yes. It was June 22nd, right?
Oh, really? My sister's and my mom's birthday are all
it's
June 22nd
or 24th. It's sometime around there.
I think it's the 24th, but anyway, sorry. Okay.
Do you follow Big Brother Canada?
Only through Twitter.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Sophie, let's talk a little bit about Debbie that you mentioned, because, you know, so many people have been making this Coach comparison to Debbie, and obviously you're somebody who spent 39 days with Coach back in the South Pacific. So do you see, you seem pretty high on Debbie. I know where you stand on Coach. So are you somebody who sees the similarities, or you think that people are just making some overgeneralizations?
I mean, it's hard for me because I played with Coach 3.0, which I think is very different from Coach 1.0, which I think is probably more similar to Debbie 1.0. I think I definitely see the similarities. I think that the one main difference, which is something Coach really prided himself on, whether or not he was good at it or not, is up for debate. He was probably better at it in version 3.0 than 1.0, but it's something that I don't see Debbie priding herself on, is like the ability to kind of nurture people and bring people under his wing. And I feel like Debbie operates from the side, right? She operates from the comfort of like, I am so kooky. I think the way Debbie's different from Coach is that Debbie operates from the side, right? She's like kooky from the side. I don't think she truly believes that she is like somebody who brings people together and forms close relationships, right? Like she recognizes that people think she's kooky. And I think she uses that as the strength. And I think that's the reason that Debbie actually might end up being more successful than Coach, is I think Coach is blinded by the relationships he forms with other people. And he thinks that they are much stronger than they actually are. And that he is a much more important person to them in their lives than he might be. Whereas Debbie, I don't think has any of those beliefs, right? Like Debbie has all these weird jobs like Coach and, I mean, that might be kind of where the similarities end. I mean, I almost feel like Debbie and Philip maybe are a little more kind of close. I think Debbie might be a better 1.0 player than Coach because she's not going to kind of get enchanted by these relationships she's forming. Like she is definitely kind of a lone ranger.
Well, okay. Debbie, Coach, Philip. Yeah, I think that these are, you know, especially in the case of Coach and Philip, very polarizing figures. Debbie seems universally popular like Ty right now. But do you feel like, because it's certainly my perception that Coach, if there were no cameras, he would not necessarily, and you lived with him for 39 days and you were with him certainly at points when you guys were not on camera and maybe there was a difference in how he was. But to me, I feel like Coach and Philip are doing things for television. I'm not sure if that's the case for Debbie. Is that your perception about how a difference between those two guys and Debbie?
I mean, I think you're right. And so maybe the question is Debbie the Wanda Shirk that we never got to see? Like, you know, what would have happened had she gotten to play? Is Debbie, you know, a lot of these kind of early season first boots who was seen as kooky and never really got the chance to prove herself? I think maybe you're right. I mean, what I'm really loving about watching Debbie is I'm loving this season. And I think I am I just love watching new players more than returning players. Because I think the difference between Debbie and like Coach 3.0 and Philip 2.0 is like you're seeing everybody in this season play the game, but play the game in their own way according to their own personality, right? And I feel like what happens when people go back on is that they have like metaphorically read the Boston Rob rules. They now have like a framework in their mind for how you play the game. And the game is no longer this pure interaction between people. It's an interaction between people who all are like trying, who are all are working within a framework that they've invented outside the game, right? And like, you know, when these people come back for the second season, it's like they have all these rules about like, oh, now I need to make an alliance. And instead of like, oh, like what is the alliance that makes the most sense? I just feel like when you watch a new season with new players, they play with each other's personalities rather than playing with each other as like chess pieces. And so I think you just get to, I don't know. I think it's just like there's so much more diversity between the players on this kind of season because you have to like the primary defining factor of somebody's game is their personality. Ty is playing like Ty. Debbie is playing like Debbie. Neil is playing like Neil. Whereas if all these people came back a second time, like Ty would be like Ty playing a game and Neil, it's like Neil, but playing this game. And I think you saw that a bit with like second chances, right? Like you saw people who maybe like in their first season would never have been so like overly strategic, and like they're all trying to be overly strategic. They're not playing to themselves. They're playing to like what they think wins Survivor. And I just love watching the new people so much more because it's more interesting as a viewer to think to yourself, like, who is Ty? What are his motivations? What drives him in life? And then what is he going to do? Rather than think about like, who is Ty and what does he think that he should be doing in the game of Survivor? So I'm loving watching Debbie for that reason.
Yeah, and I think the other interesting part of this, where you've talked about Coach 1.0, and I do think that that's probably the purest coach, because I do think that after Coach comes back and sees what hit and what didn't hit in terms of TV and camera time, I think you see him really from the get-go on Heroes versus Villains, where he's going to be doing Coach Chi and Feathers in the, you know, and all sorts of stuff. Okay, these are going to be the things to get me camera time. And I don't suspect that Ty is doing things to get camera time. And I don't sense that Debbie is doing those things to get camera time. But on a returnee season, you wonder, you know, does the bad Ty version become, is that Rupert 2.0, 3.0?
Yeah.
You know, do they start to become caricatures of themselves at that point where they come back and have a catchphrase and do all that stuff?
I think returning seasons are, you know, the last one was amazing to watch. It was a lot of fun. But I just think they are totally two different games that are being played. And I think a good, case study, an example of this is, like, when you watch Max play. Like when Max played his first time, I guess his only time, right? Like he was almost like a returning player in the way that he presented himself. And I think that's because he had been such a super fan that he was going in with this like construct already built rather than going in as Max. Like, I don't think I understand who Max is and how Max would play Survivor purely. Like I know who like how like Max the super fan who thinks how he thinks he should be on Survivor and that he should be naked and that he should be, you know, controlling these alliances or whatever it is. And so I do think that a little bit with super fans, right? Like a bit of that purity is washed away. And so like I would be a proponent of a season of people that just like picked off the street in New York City who'd never seen Survivor before and put them on an island. Cause I'm a little bit with Jeff on this one. Like I just think, you know, seeing it's like a, whatever you called it, like a microcosm of the world and Survivor is the most fascinating part of Survivor. And I think you lose a bit of that magic with all this like returning players, like self-referential bullshit.
So you would propose to get rid of the entire Survivor casting department. You're like somebody that's saying like, hey, let's just get rid of, you know, this agency. We've got too much government here. Let's just find 16 people, put them on the island, and boom, let's go.
Listen, you take 50 casting agents, or you take 20 casting agents, you put them all around the country in interesting places, maybe in a factory at one place, in a bar at one place, and you give them 24 hours to find somebody who's never watched Survivor before. They find that person in 24 hours, those 20 people get shipped out the next day without watching any seasons, without prepping for the game, and you see like season one all over again. I've talked about this before, Rob. This is what I want to see. Yeah.
I definitely understand where you're coming from. I think that's probably too much of an overcorrection. If you're talking about how you love this season, that they've done everything right this season, I don't know why you want to completely just throw the baby out with the bathwater.
I don't think they've done everything right this season. I'm a little nervous for this season. I feel like we've been like having a slow boil of good episodes. And I have a feeling that like, the air might all drain out pretty soon, but we'll see. I feel like we're building up to something that might crash.
Okay. Too big to fail. Is that what you're feeling about the season? All right. So let's talk about what's going on the other tribe, because other than Debbie, we've really barely touched what's going on there. And it's such an interesting situation there for the two members that are surviving from the Braun tribe over there in Jason and Sydney, where they're going to go. Do you have a good sense of how that's going to shake out at that tribe?
I don't. I have to think about who's on the tribe. It's a 2-2-2 split. But I kind of feel like on this tribe, what matters more than the numbers, like 2-2-2, you kind of like your instinct would
would be to say, oh, it could go either way. It could go brains, brawn, or beauty. It's going to depend on an idol. But I actually think what's super important is like who the pairs are and like what their chemistry is between the pairs. And so if we look at them, we have like, all the pairs are kind of weird, right? Like we have Nick and Michelle, mm-hmm. and we've seen that, like, I don't know if it's through the secret scenes or not, but like we've seen that Michelle, the women on the Beauty Tribe are not that into Nick, right? I think he was like the least favorite guy. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't seem like a super strong pair. Then we have Sydney and Jason. And I would say like a similar situation there where I feel like Sydney was really Scott's girl. But I mean, maybe this is just in my head, but for some reason I have this memory of like Sydney being in that man's alliance, not really liking Jason that much, or at least I'm just imagining what this might be like if I was in that alliance, because Jason seems so insufferable.
I think that's more fan fiction, Sophie. I don't think she's okay. ever come out and say she doesn't like Jason or she preferred Scott to Jason.
Well, my fan fiction is that she prefers Scott to Jason, and Scott's really the glue in that situation.
Okay.
And without Scott, I don't know. We'll see what happens. That said, I think Sydney seems pretty risk averse. Given her whole situation with like, she had that opportunity to go with the girls, it actually seemed like it maybe would have been a good opportunity. And she kind of like, you know, kind of reneged on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is Debbie and Neil, which honestly kind of like maybe seems like the strongest pair, but I think that because they voted together in the past. But I wonder if actually that's the one that might break up, only because I feel like I feel like she probably is quite sensitive, right? We saw in the secret scene this week that she was getting a little frustrated with Neil the way he talked to her. And I could see Debbie being somebody who almost like Shambo in a way, somebody that like, if you underestimate as somebody who's just going to follow you, if you don't corral her in, I could see her easily going off and saying, well, you know, Neil's being an asshole to me. I'm going to join up with Michelle and with Nick.
Yeah.
So if I had to guess what's going to happen that tribe, like which, right, one of these three pairs is going to split up and which of the pairs is going to be, I think I would bet on Debbie and Neil, right? The brains overthink things. They think that they can make a clever move and then they fuck themselves over.
You know, it's really interesting that you referenced that secret scene with Debbie and Neil, because it was, one of those where it's like edited where it could have been in the show, but it ended up just getting cut for time. But she ends up talking about in that scene where she ends up having a disagreement with Neil. That scene is actually labeled the commanding officer, because she ends it by saying, like, does he know who he's talking to? I'm the commanding officer around here. And so, you know, you do see some friction there between Neil and Debbie. While it seems like on the surface, everything is hunky dory. But I do feel like, you know, they might both be feeling like, well, you know, I'm the calling the shots here. And then I got this other idiot with me. But they both feel that way.
Yeah. And honestly, the last time that Debbie felt that way, what is this guy telling me to do? I'm the commanding officer, was probably with Peter. And what did she do? You know, she screwed him over. And so I think that this is a situation, you know, that she's like a little bit of an Abby now. I think with some coddling, I think she could jump.
See, I see it a little bit differently, that I felt like that she was more screwing Liz over, that she felt like she didn't like Liz and Peter. I felt like she could more live with, and I felt like it was more Neil and Aubrey who were more anti-Peter. But we don't need to, split hairs over that. You know, it's an interesting season too, in terms of that there's so many male-female pairs that we've seen in this season, whether, you know, it was at the original Brains Tribe, you had three male-female pairs split 2-2-2 with Debbie and Joe and Neil and Aubrey.
Yep.
And then also with Peter and Liz. And then also now you have, you know, back at that new Channel O tribe, where now the pair is Aubrey and Joe working together, and Anna and Ty were sort of in a situation where they were working together, but, you know, Ty decided to go back to bromance. He's the only person looking for a bromance on this season. Everybody else is male, female. And then you have now in this new tribe where it's Nick and Michelle, and then Jason and Sydney, yep. and now Debbie with Neil. It's always a male-female pair in the season, just like Sophie and Albert.
Just like Sophie and Albert. Is this uncommon? I feel like this is quite uncommon, right? It's usually, I'm trying to think of seasons that have been similar to this. It's been strange.
You know, well, going back to your season where you had a six-person alliance back at Upolu, minus Cochran, and, you know, forgetting about like with Michaela in the mix. So you guys had a six-person alliance, which was uncommon, I feel like, on Survivor. I feel like it's usually mm-hmm. five or smaller. Six is big. When you guys got down to the final six, were you guys into groups of two?
Okay, well, first of all, I would say it was not a six-person alliance. Brandon made it very clear to Edna on like
six.
Day two.
Yeah.
Yeah, that she was not in the alliance. I think she misheard it. It was all very confusing. No, I would say that our alliance, dare I say that they were voting, there was the potential to be voting blocks within our alliance.
Hold on. Like, I almost say that there were. They weren't even invented yet, Sophie.
Well, I think that we invented, I think that, I mean, I think this is probably, no, actually, hold up. I think we invented voting blocks. I think we invented voting blocks. I am sorry, Stephen Fishback, but I actually think that we invented voting blocks. We just never acted on them, mm-hmm. right? Because by definition, to have a voting block, you need to have a large group of people, right? So you can't have an alliance for four and really have voting blocks within it. Like, maybe you could, but it's not going to work. Because we had such a large alliance, I will say that I think there were many, many, what some people may call sub-alliances, but I will call voting blocks, within that alliance. And the reason I say they're voting blocks and not sub-alliances, although, you know, Stephen will argue they're not voting blocks because they did not vote as a block. Mm-hmm. But they are definitely alliance blocks. And it is because, unlike, let's say, the Brains tribe that you could see as like a six-person alliance with three like sub-alliances of these pairs, our six-person alliance in South Pacific had like blocks within it that were shifting, right? There was a block of like me, Albert, and Rick, and there was a block of me, Albert, and Coach, and then there was the block of Albert, Coach, and Brandon, and then there was Brandon and Rick, and so there was a lot of overlap between these. And I think that's common within any alliance, right? That's what makes a successful alliance, is everybody feels like they're in a you know, core onion of the alliance, and so thus they have a path to the end. But I think ours was like even more to that extreme, because there were six of us, and so there were, by definition, you know, I'm sure Liz could tell you this, we use the quantitative analysis, but there were like more possibilities within our six. Mm-hmm. So actually, I am going to assert that we had the first voting blocks that never voted.
There you go. Okay.
All right. So bring it back. That was a bit of a rant.
Bring it back to this tribe now, Sophie. So then, yeah. How do you see this shaking out?
You're totally right. How do I see this shaking out?
Because I think that probably Jason and Sydney are feeling like, oh, well, this isn't just 2-2-2. This is voting blocks here, because I've got me and Sydney, and then me and Sydney and Nick and Michelle, and then me and Sydney and Debbie and Neil. So it does feel as though that Jason and Sydney are in the power position, but they will pick a side. So what side do you think they're going to pick?
Wait, why do you think that Jason and Sydney are in the power position?
Because that we saw both Nick going to Jason and saying, hey, we really want to work with you guys. And then we also saw where it was Debbie going to Jason saying, hey, we really want to work with you guys. But what we didn't see was Nick and Michelle going to Debbie and Neil saying, hey, let's vote out Jason and Sydney.
Right, right.
Because again, as Stephen Fishback said on the other night, that the greatest strength in the game is perceived weakness. And you have these people from the Braun tribe and everybody's like, okay, well, they're only down to three. Let's pick them up and go after the other big tribe.
Yep. I'm wondering if there's another way to look at this, that maybe there's going to be, right, everybody's anticipating a swap soon. And so I almost feel like...
Merge.
Everybody's anticipating a merge soon. And I'm almost looking at this tribe and saying, who on this tribe has the most number of alliance mates on the other side? And is thus maybe like not so worried about their partner on this tribe going out, because they know that they can pretty soon... reconvene. Like, I almost see this in a way like a rock draw, right? Like, everybody's playing chicken. There's like 2-2-2, which is gonna be like, either you have a pair that breaks up, or you have two pairs that join together. But I think there could be a situation where a pair breaks up and somebody turns on one of their own, knowing that soon there's a merge. They want to save their own skin. They're worried that they're going to be targeted, and they'd rather target the other person. And I just feel like, of the people on this tribe who might do that, who might kind of turn against their other one, I see Michelle turning on Nick, right? She didn't like Nick that much.
You get back to Julia and Ty?
Yeah, you're right. Anna's not over there anymore.
I love what you're saying, but I feel like that the person...
There's not enough people, yeah.
Yeah, I think the person that would make sense to do that might be Neil. I feel like that he might be the one. Let me get back to
because
Aubrey
of the
and
three
Joe.
Over there.
Or Debbie.
Yeah.
I think Neil.
Or Debbie. Yeah.
One of those two could say, forget this other person. Let me get back to where, you know, the other person, especially in the case of Neil, is like, hey, I've got an idol. Like, I don't want to waste my idol. Let me just, you know, throw Debbie under the bus. She's getting on my nerves anyway. She thinks she's the commanding officer. I'm the commanding officer. Let me get back to Joe and Aubrey and at least we have Peter there. Yep. I could be in the numbers back again, and just I need to get through this yep. one vote.
And I think another reason why that might happen, why the Debbie and Neil breakup might happen, is I think that Jason, Michelle, Sydney, and Nick, looking at the other tribe and seeing that the brains have the numbers over there, are going to say, well, let's get a brain off over here then, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that you could see that type of scenario if it turns this next week where it looks like that for whatever reason, Jason and Sydney pick Nick and Michelle. And it's obvious that it's going to be just like last week or this past episode where it was obvious it was going to be either Ty or Anna is going to go. I think in that scenario, you could see one. I'll work with you guys. Yeah. I just need to get back to my people and throw the other one under the bus.
I mean, we could almost have the same exact scenario. Do you think in that scenario that Neil uses his idol for Debbie? Like, is this going to be totally the Ty scenario all over again?
Wow. That's
and what
really
is Neil going to do? That's really wild.
Yeah, we could see that's the same exact thing. And then do you think then somebody says to Neil, like, hey, Neil, don't waste your idol here. Jason's like, hey, Neil.
Jason's going to say it. Yeah, super idol.
Don't waste the idol because look, I know where the votes are going. And we'll stick with me. I mean, but that isn't that smart, though? And if you were Jason, wouldn't you want to keep the person with the idol in the game? Doesn't it completely change the way that we think about the hidden immunity idol? Because normally you want to flush the idol. But if you're Jason, are you better off with the hidden immunity idol being in the game and knowing where it is,
yes.
potentially where, or are you better off where, hey, if we flush the idol, I have a chance where I could actually get it?
Now, the question, I mean, and the thing is, it seems like there's no reason not to align with that person who has the idol, right? Like, it's guaranteed safety. Like, even if this is not somebody you want in your alliance, like, you're giving yourself a freebie. My only question is, how exactly does this work? Like, is there a situation? Yeah, sure. Let's say that Jason and Neil find each other and they're like, oh, dude, we have a super idol. We can't give it out. Well, like, what happens if somebody votes for Jason? I assume that, like, Neil has to, in the moment, agree to do it.
Hook a brother up.
Yeah, you got to hook our brother up, which means that it's not just a matter of like, oh, we're both safe. Like, it's a matter of like, you really need to form a bond with this person. Mm-hmm. Like, you're giving something to this person. So I'm really skeptical, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, of this whole like, you know, Scott getting Ty to help Jason and maybe Jason finding Neil. Like, it seems like these are relationships that are kind of too cross alliance to be successful. It seems like for the super idol to be really successful, you have to have a lot of trust in this person and they have to have a big kind of like impact onto your game.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I don't think that we're ever going to get a scenario this season where the super idol comes together because they didn't use it in Second Chance. Maybe they felt like they needed to have it play out here first before they could use it another season. But I don't know. It's very interesting to see. I feel like that this could be something sort of like the Exile Alliance, something that just gets talked about a lot this season, but doesn't actually play out.
I mean, honestly, I feel like it's what's like happening in Syria right now, right?
Whoa.
It's like Russia and the United States, and like they both have super idols and they're both fighting ISIS, but they're doing it in different ways, right? Like one is like propping up the rebels and one is like propping up the government. And it's like fine to say we're against a common enemy that is ISIS, but like at the end of the days, you're putting your weapon or you're putting your super idol against one thing. And I don't think Russia is going to like give us bombs anytime soon to help, you know, destroy the rebels. And so like in theory, yeah, we're against the same enemy. But I think when it comes down to it, this is an analogy that's not really working right now.
Sophie,
but like,
I would much more prepared to have this conversation with you as it pertains to House of Cards. But unfortunately, I have not been following the international Syria crisis as closely as you have.
Yeah. Okay, fine.
All right. Sophie, you want to start to talk about some questions I have for you?
Yeah. Are we missing anything? Is there anything else super interesting about the season that we're missing?
I think there's a lot super interesting. I mean, do you have any other hot takes about anybody? Is there anybody that you are absolutely loving that we haven't talked about or anybody that you are really disliking?
I don't think so. I feel like I'm just seeing a ton of potential and I'm like waiting like for people to emerge.
Well, who's your winner pick then right now, Sophie?
My winner pick's Michelle.
Michelle. What are you seeing about Michelle?
So right now I'm in pool. And so I feel like I'm trying to really be a sleuth in all forms. And by that, I mean like what's happening on the screen, what's happening in Edgic, and then also like what's going on in Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I definitely feel like they're building up this Women's Alliance story that has to end somewhere. And I feel like I could see it ending in Michelle rather than ending in Julia. I've also heard Propes compare her to Parvati. Which I have not yet seen on the screen, which makes me feel like it's some kind of weird winner comparison that they're not editing in. Anyways, Michelle's my pick for now.
Okay. Sophie, let's jump into some of the questions I have for you from the listeners of the podcast. Thomas Forsey wants to know, Anna joins the likes of RC, Allie, So, and Liz as attractive and intelligent young women to play the game too aggressively out of the gate and get taken out at the first tribal council they go to. Why is this player archetype so threatening or off-putting to the rest of the players that they need to be taken out of the game at the first opportunity? First off, do you reject the statement or do you think it's a fair one?
Well, so I kind of reject that Anna got taken out because she was playing too difficult, too hard.
I do too.
So I'm rejecting that. And then the other, the concept of people, like that there's always an archetype that gets voted out early. I mean, there's every kind of archetype gets voted out early. And why wouldn't this make sense? You know, somebody's playing hard is going to be identified as like a strategic threat.
Couldn't you argue there are also young men who play the game too aggressively and get taken out at the first tribal council?
I think
anybody who plays the game too aggressively can get taken out at the first tribal council. So I don't know. I don't think it was that, Anna, they're so threatened by Anna's, you know, incredible good looks. That's why she had to be taken and she was being so aggressive. They had to take her out.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, like obviously there's an element of luck, but there's an element of like, you just didn't play that well if you voted out early. Right. Yeah.
Right.
And it's not a pattern of like, oh my God, there's all these amazing women who are just getting screwed because Survivor is sexist. Like, you know, something went wrong. And I think in some cases it's luck. And in some cases, like you didn't play your hand perfectly.
Right. It's a numbers game. They wanted to go after a beauty. I mean, it could have just as easily been, you know, Nick and Michelle on this group that one of them would have gone home this week. It came down to a toss up between Anna and one of the most lovable people in the entire, one of the most lovable and non-threatening people in the entire world in Ty. Like, you choose.
Yeah.
Well, who are you going to take out in that spot?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, if you want to have a conversation about like people being taken out unfairly, you have a conversation about like Asian women on the show being like dubbed strategic, whether or not they're strategic or not, or sneaky. Like, that's a conversation we can have. Or about how like the fact that like it seems like many of the first boots are often African American, but the idea that you just have like clever, smart women who are getting screwed, like, I don't really buy into that idea. I think you have a lot of clever women who are going past the merge, and it's up to them / luck.
Okay. Graham says, sup, Sophie and Rob. Do you think that Neil is doing enough at this point to make it to the end? How much more time does he have before he needs to turn his game on?
Oh, Neil. I mean, I'm curious to know what Neil's end game is. I assume his end game is to go on with, you know, go on with Debbie. But I think Neil has what it takes to get to the end. No, I also just don't see a world in which Neil wins at the end, right? Like, I actually think there's a lot of people in this cast who are likable people who can win. Like, you look at Ty, Joe, Aubrey, Michelle, I think Debbie even in a weird way. I think Neil, Peter, Jason, I think they're all facing a bit of an uphill battle. Like, there just seems to be nothing like extremely distinctive about them socially.
Let's stick with Neil. Because tell me, what is the turnoff for you with Neil? And don't worry about this. He does not listen to podcasts, so feel free to speak openly.
Neil? No, I honestly, has he even gotten that much screen time? I'm totally a casual viewer these days. Like, I just don't really have much of an impression of Neil yet. Like, I have an impression because he seems like a nice guy on Twitter and I follow him. Mm-hmm. I think he could have the sash curse. Like, I could see a world in which he is a very nice guy who makes some great moves and gets to the end, but he is perceived to be slimier than he actually is because of the way he like kind of talks and presents himself.
You know what I think was a bad sign for him last night? And Steven had tweeted about this where Neil finds the hidden immunity idol and Neil ends up saying that, hey, I'm the front runner right now. If you went to Las Vegas, and Steven had tweeted, that's exactly the sort of thing the front runner says before they're no longer the front runner. And again, that might be the kind of thing where we look back and it's in the winner montage. That's Neil's winner quote.
No.
I'm the front runner right now. But I kind of feel like that 9 times out of 10, that's not a great sign.
No. What happens when a winner finds an idol? Like, if you think about like Tony finding the idol, or like, I think Tyson finding the idol, right? It's always just this like, the music swells and it's like, you know, tears form in their eyes and it looks like they're, you know, they're excited and their game is saved. They don't have like the air, you know, they kiss it. It's that kind of a scene. It's not like the arrogant kind of, well, I'm on top now kind of thing.
Or it's like pure excitement. I feel like didn't Cochran find an idol and his was excitement? Like it was, you're right. I think Stephen picked up on something. I think Stephen picked up on
like that.
Who is that?
That was Tony. That was your boy,
yes,
Tony.
It's huge. I needed this. Not like a, I'm so great. Look at this.
Yeah. Neil also said that the king has the idol now.
Exactly. Exactly. And the thing is, the only person who could say that and get away with it being endearing and win the game would be Cochran, because it's a joke, right?
Right.
And we haven't gotten that far with Neil.
Yeah. Okay. This is from Nicolette, who wants to know, if you had to describe yourself as the love child of two survivors, who would they be?
Ooh, good question. I have my two people. I'm not so sure about the second one. Only because, well, anyways, I'm going to say it. And mostly I like to think about these two copulating. Like it's not just like a pure genetic thing. So I would say Sue Hawk and Stephen Fishbag.
Wow. Well, that would be a wild night. So Sue Hawk and Stephen Fishbag. Yeah. Well, I played with one. I podcast with the other. Maybe I could make the introduction.
Oh my God. Imagine that child.
One night. Yeah. Well, that'd be wild. What do you think of Stephen Fishbag in a paternal sense of like a, you could be potentially my father and not legitimately.
Yeah. I mean, I think I just like mostly copy everything that Stephen says and does. So I'm kind of like a genetic clone.
You could do worse.
Yeah.
There's worse people to copy. Okay. Let's take some more questions. Dave Backer wants to know, how would you deal with the narcissism of Peter, Nick, and Jason?
Oh, you deal with it exactly the way that like Debbie is dealing with it, is that you like smile and nod and you make them feel like they have the upper hand. And you say yes to them and then you bitch about them on the camera. I mean, I think, you know, it's like the difference between how Debbie deals with this kind of stuff and how like Abby deals with this kind of stuff is night and day. I think you strike gold when you meet narcissists on Survivor, right? Like the only way you win Survivor is like by either winning out challenges or going to the end with people who don't realize you're going to beat them. And by definition, like, you know, the way to do that is like go to the people with the end who are narcissists and don't realize that you're better than them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was definitely my strategy. And I think that that's, you know, I think that there's a lot of opportunity for that in this season.
Yeah. So you would not be somebody who is going to, hey, we have to get rid of the Peters, the Knicks. You would say keep them around for as long as possible. Or it's just like, do you look up at a certain point in Final Seven, like, oh, that guy's a narcissist. That's a good person to keep around.
No, I mean, I think it's like, this is like a little bit of the Boston Rob rules, right? Like if you can keep somebody like Philip or Coach or Peter or anybody in control who doesn't have enough self-awareness to realize they're never going to win this game and thus is not going to vote you out. Like that's the ultimate, you know, that's the ultimate game. I don't know if that game has ever been played at like the last minute of like looking around and saying, who can I be with? I think that game is successful because it's like hard and miserable and you have to spend your 39 days with these people, mm-hmm, and like deal with them. And that's not the easiest thing to do when you just want to have fun with the beauty girls and talk about pizza. Like that, it's often a winning strategy.
Pizza is delicious.
I love pizza.
Allison Jean Cola wants to know, do any of this season's players stand out as looking particularly clean in their cast assessment photos or 13 days in? Sophie, I know that is, as you said, the best compliment a person could give, that somebody looks extremely clean.
Oh my God. And Allison, as you're asking this question, I'm looking at myself in this FaceTime with Rob and I'm looking incredibly unclean and it's making me super sad.
I'm sure you look more clean than me, Sophie.
No, I don't. But I'm super excited. I'm house sitting right now and I brought like super clean clothes to wear this weekend. I like, even as I was packing, I was like, oh, I'm going to look so clean when I wear that.
Yeah.
Anyway, clean people on this season are, you know, there are actually not a lot of clean people. Like, Rob, tell me if you see this, but like, I would say that not many of the beauty girls are clean. Like, I wouldn't call those girls clean. I would actually say that the cleanest girl in the season was probably Liz. She's like a very clean girl.
Yeah.
Like I think Alicia is not a very clean girl. I think partially because of the dyed
hair.
You're
being literal when you're talking about, you're not being figurative in any sort of way about being clean.
I think maybe there might be a figurative aspect to it, but it's a very visual thing. You just look at somebody and you're like, oh yeah, I know you're their clean girl. For example, if I had to say which of the three beauty girls was the cleanest, it's a tough call, but I would probably say Anna.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think that Liz probably cleaner than all. And honestly, Sydney is incredibly clean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sydney's a clean person.
Yeah. We know, Sophie, that you are so obsessed with people being clean and looking clean that even our own Shut Up Tim knew about this and wanted to make this for you.
Ain't nobody quite like she. Sophie looks so clean.
Sophie looks so clean, clean.
Had no time for Jack and Jill. Sophie looks so clean.
Sophie looks so clean, clean.
Doesn't like cereal season 2. Sophie looks so clean.
Sophie looks so clean, clean.
Albert, come here and help me. Sophie looks so clean.
Sophie looks so clean, clean.
You don't look super amused.
I'm gonna cry. No, it's amazing. I am incredibly amused. Oh my God, I'm in love with it. I'm in love with it. Oh my God. I want that played at my funeral and my wedding, like all events that I attend. Oh my God.
Okay, well, I'll email you the MP3.
I'm going to send that to my friends because they're going to be so jealous.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I would rather be clean than like have that song be made, but I'm never going to really be clean. So holy shit. Email me the MP3.
All right.
Rob, I'm so jealous of your job. This is like the kind of things that come out of your job.
Because
like, isn't that incredible?
Make songs for people.
Yeah.
I'm not going to knock it. It's a good gig. It's a good gig. Brian Altshul wants to know: does it make sense for the 18-year-old to go out and compete on Survivor? Is Julia doing the right thing in concealing her age? Well, I think that seems like a fine thing to be doing. I don't know. Are you saying she should be in school, Brian? But what about the part about concealing her age?
I thought that was really interesting. That was the first time we heard about it, right? Yeah. I didn't know that she was doing that. Honestly, like, what? They think she's 19 instead of 18? Like, I'm not.
We don't know how old she's saying she is.
Maybe she's saying she's like, you know, a senior and 21 or something. I do think there's a bit like 18 is definitely young. Although we played with Brandon and Brandon was, I think, 19. And honestly, the first day you're like, oh my God, this person's 19. But I do feel like on Survivor more than anywhere else in the world, like age kind of dissolves and it doesn't really matter much.
Because so you were honestly, just 21, right? When you played?
I was just 21. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was 21.
And you didn't lie about that. You didn't say, oh, I'm 24 or anything like that.
No.
Okay.
No. I was just 21. I mean, I'm trying to think of like, this makes sense. I honestly don't know if it makes sense to lie about your age or to not lie about your age. I thought what was more interesting in that, maybe she said it and maybe I just read into it, but I assume that she's going to say at Final Tribal Council, should she reach there, hey guys, like this was super tough for me. Like I'm only 18 years old. You guys, you know, have all had jobs and et cetera. And like, you know, kind of pull the, who did this? I don't know. Steven did this a little bit of like, I'm a fish out of water, right? A little bit of the like personal adversity story.
And how'd that go?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if personal adversity stories go that well. So I'm not sure if like the best, I'm trying to think of like how you'd want to play this card.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's much of a card to play. I almost feel like you're better off that just say from the up front, you're 18 and people would admire you. I think you'd become, again, like Steven said, less threatening to people. I don't think people will vote you out. Like, she's just 18. Get rid of her. Whereas I think if she did get to the end, but I feel like that if you duped me, where it's like, I thought you were 22 and then I find out at the Final Tribal Council, you were 18. I kind of feel like, I don't know if that would make me want to vote for you more.
Yeah. And like, unlike Jeremy's thing where he had a reason to be concealing it, right? He was just like, I didn't want to have to like talk about it whenever everything, it made sense. Whereas this, I feel like her being 18 could win her some votes. Like I do think that could win her votes, but I think it would win her votes had she told them already and have it come to them in their own back of the mind saying, wow, like Julie played a pretty good game and wow, she's only 18. How impressive. Like nobody wants to be told how impressive somebody else is. Like, I want to think to myself, wow, Julie is really impressive. Instead of having Julie be like, hey, by the way, guys, I'm super impressive because I'm only 18, right? It's like, it's just annoying. Right.
And the Jeremy thing, I think it's really just complete apples and oranges because it's not like Jeremy was duping people. That it wasn't like people were asking like, hey, Jeremy, is Val pregnant? Yes or no, right now? Tell me right now. You know, and he didn't volunteer like, Val's definitely not pregnant right now. It's just like, you know, that, you don't always tell people when somebody is pregnant.
Yeah.
So, it was just, you know, an omission that he was able to share with them and not something about that. But I do think you're right that people would be, I think if she got to the end, I think that they would celebrate the fact that she was an 18-year-old and did such a great job. Again, she has to do something. She's not going to win it alone on, hey, I'm 18. But I did read, I believe it was in Josh Wiggler's exit interview with Anna. I believe Anna said that she did know, Julia did tell her how old she actually was.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big proponent of like lying as little as possible on Survivor because I feel like people want to feel like they know you when they vote for you. And I remember on my season, everybody lied about their jobs. Like Jim, you know, said that he was a high school teacher instead of a marijuana dealer. Edna told us that she was a small business owner instead of a doctor. And I just feel
she is a small business owner.
Yeah, but she admitted stuff. And for me, like, I didn't lie at all about, like, what I was doing. And I just feel like people want to, I don't know. I just feel like honesty wins a lot of points in Survivor. And I know I personally would be kind of put off, like, wait, do I even know you? I think it's unnecessary, a lot of these lies.
On a lot of these reality shows, people tend to lie about dumb stuff.
I mean, honestly, I think it's because they think they're kind of like, right? It's like a superficial strategy. They're like, oh, I need to do something that's strategic, in quotation marks. And instead of thinking about like what the actual repercussions of that is, they're like, oh, I'll just lie about something. And like, that'll make me devious. Mm-hmm. But it's like neither devious nor is it like useful.
Yeah. But it's always like, often the kind of things like, well, oh, I'm a college professor. I can't tell people that I teach college. So I have to, you know, tell people I teach third grade.
And then my answer to that is like, so who gives a fuck you teach college? Like,
right.
You know, like what? You think that much of yourself? And like, what's wrong with a third grade teacher? Are you saying that a college teacher is better than a third grade teacher? I just think it can backfire in so many ways.
Yeah. Again, but we go back to Tony of like, oh, I can't tell people I'm a cop. I've told people I'm a construction worker. It made sense to him and it made him feel more comfortable. So I guess, who's to say Rob, we should knock it?
Tony can do no wrong. Okay. Derek on Big Brother as well. Although I do think the cop thing makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you have this, I think the cop thing and maybe even the poker player thing, not as necessarily reveals at the end, but I think that you, right? Like we were saying before, like I think at the beginning of Survivor, especially people are just like looking for any reason to vote somebody out that's not them. And I think that those like being a cop, being a poker player are the same kind of stupid tells as like going for a walk early in the game and people think you're looking for an idol. It's like a signal of something that's like not necessarily true. Like it's Steven had this problem in the Second Chances, right? Like he had all these signals that he was a devious player and like he wasn't necessarily an untrustworthy player. People like expected that out of him. Mm-hmm. I think it does make sense to lie about maybe some of the jobs when people have expectations of you that you want to make sure are not fulfilled.
One of the criticisms I had read about Anna from the comments in the exit interview that I had done with her earlier today was that she said she didn't really trust Ty once he went out looking for the idol and he didn't tell her what he was doing. And that was a reason why she felt like she couldn't trust him. And people felt like that was sort of a BS reason to not trust him. But I think that makes a lot of sense to me. What's your take on that? If so, there was somebody that was in your tribe, again, like a Christine Markoski, who was looking for the idol, but not telling you and being upfront about what she was doing.
100% untrustworthy. I mean, like, and Christine wasn't even in my alliance that I wouldn't trust her. But like, especially I think somebody who's within your alliance, who's like supposed to be your friend, who's looking for the idol and is not telling you, but I think that breeds even more paranoia. Like you expect the people who are not in your alliance to look. The people in your alliance, like I think you then can't trust a single word they say. Mm-hmm. I think it's totally reasonable.
Mika wants to know, how should Scott use his information about the idols at the merge? Have you given this any thought?
Ooh, I have not. So Scott knows that Ty has an idol and Scott knows that Jason has an idol.
So who's he? He's like Syria?
I mean, I think that Scott should keep his information, right, to himself. Because there's nothing that he gains from saying it immediately. Like, I feel like he gains when there's a time to use it and to fix it. I mean, I don't know. It's so tough. I just think it's a matter of like, who's at the merge, what's going on at the merge. But I do think that Scott right now, like, as he said, he's the only person with this information. Mm-hmm. Like, he can help Ty by identifying the person on the other tribe, and he can help Jason by identifying the person on the other tribe. And he can also be the person who knows like where the idols are and to flush them. And so, I mean, I feel like there's a game where this kind of stuff is important of like just having the knowledge. It's like this. It's like Clue. You know the game Clue when like you're the only person who knows where the rope is. Mm-hmm. Like nobody else knows where the rope is, and you have this like secret little extra information of like, you know, or not where the rope is, but you know like what one of the things is that killed the person. Mm-hmm. I feel like Scott is that person, and so like until other people figure it out, like there's no reason to like show that card yet.
Yeah. Okay. This is from Nathan Bayless, who says, Anna was screwed by a tribe swap more than any other player in Survivor history. Discuss. True or false?
God, I hate these kind of sweeping statements. I don't know. Who else was screwed by a tribe swap? I think false.
I think a lot of people, yeah.
No pumpkin, no.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that you want to argue maybe top five, baby. I could see it.
I don't know.
Tough to answer off the top of your head.
Tough to answer. Wasn't Josh screwed by a tribe swap? Or was that a tribe merge? Is that the same kind of screwing? Is it different to be screwed by a swap?
Josh was screwed by Julie McGee quitting the game. That they were going to vote off Jeremy, I believe, first vote after the merge. And then they had the numbers, and then Julie McGee quit. And then John and Jacqueline backed out and sided with the Jeremy side. And then Josh got voted out and became the first person on the jury.
I can't believe she quit. I forgot about that.
Yeah. She loved John, her boyfriend John, too much.
I guess she quit and John recently, too. I saw that.
Oh, really? That's a lot of that going around. Sophie, I believe my pick for the worst person screwed by the tribe swap, I'll give you just a couple off the top of my head. I'll give you Silas from Survivor Africa, who there had never been a tribe swap before. And that was sort of like, he didn't even know that was a thing that could happen. So that's pretty bad. He wasn't going to win anyway, but that's pretty bad. How about Aaron Riceberger in China? That he was, he was right there with, with Todd and Amanda. And sure, that he was sort of like the figurehead in there. And really, Todd and Amanda are sort of like behind the scenes pulling the strings. But he just got stolen. And then PG throws challenges to just get him voted off. So he's in a good position in one tribe. All of a sudden, you get, one of these challenges where then they threw it just to vote him off. So that was pretty big. Minding your own business in one tribe, and all of a sudden, the other tribe throws challenges to vote you off.
Tribe swaps suck so bad, right?
Somebody usually gets screwed pretty hard.
And they are worse than merges. Like, usually somebody gets kind of screwed at a merge, but the reason I think the tribe swaps are bad is I think people are, more risk-averse at tribe swaps because they don't have the whole picture yet. Like, once you get to the merge, you have the whole picture. Then I think there was a possibility for the people at the bottom to move to the top. But, as we saw today, you have Peter in that swap, and Peter's on the outs, and he's still stuck with his tribe. I think that there is just this like it's so close to the merge. People want to get to the merge. Like, even if they're not comfortable within their certain situation, if they have the numbers at the swap, they stick with it. I would love to see how many situations there are at swaps where the tribe with the numbers does not stick together.
Yeah.
And I think that the situation, I'm thinking of the One World situation, maybe it was one of those. I feel like they had a weird swap.
They had a weird swap in that it was really lopsided. And Monica Culpepper, who was not in a great position pre-swap, she ends up being the person that gets voted out post-swap. Kelly Wentworth, did not get a great deal there post-swap. A lot of times, if it's somebody who was in a pretty solid spot beforehand, then they end up. And again, look, you can't argue that anybody was playing a perfect game, swap happened, and they lost, but there are people that were in pretty good positions that ultimately lost because they ended up on the wrong tribe.
Yeah. I just think it's so much more of a numbers game than even at the merge.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of times you get into then a tribe is throwing the challenge, especially when a tribe throws a challenge to get rid of somebody, that's usually a good indication of a pretty raw deal, and that doesn't seem to be what happened with Anna. Ron Chan wants to know, Sophie, true or false, by the end of the season, most viewers will consider Koh Rong to be one of the top 10 seasons of all time.
False.
False.
There's too many good seasons. Who is this person asking this question? There's a billion seasons now. Top 10 seasons is 1% of the seasons.
Wow.
No, false. I just think that it's a good season so far, but I have to believe that from the way that Jeff is not hyping it, that it's going to be middle of the pack.
Middle of the pack. Look, I think we would take that. I think we're all afraid it was going to be a really bad season when Jeff seemed really down on it.
Yeah. But what is up with Jeff these days? Remember, he was up on season 30. What the hell was that about? Do you think he was just trolling us about season 30?
I don't think that's how Jeff works. I think that maybe that he thought okay, if I really hype up the season, a lot of people will watch it. And then it's that didn't really do anything. So it just got a lot of people on the internet annoyed with me. So maybe I just won't do that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe he was just hyping it because of the number 30.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it felt maybe okay. Maybe especially after San Juan del Sur. We know that Jeff didn't love San Juan del Sur. So maybe he felt hey, boy, you know, people really, you know, that might be what it is, because, you know, coming out of Blood versus Water, people really liked Blood versus Water. He didn't really hype Kagiyan. And then he didn't really say anything about San Juan del Sur. Again, people really liked Kagiyan. But then people, Jeff, I think, felt like they didn't love San Juan del Sur. So he had to really hype Worlds Apart. Like, no, this one's good. Trust me.
You'll like this one.
And then he didn't have to really hype the, and then coming off of the Second Chance, he's like, who's leaving? Who's leaving right now?
Yeah, I think maybe you're right. Like, maybe this will turn out to be like a Kagiyan type season.
I mean, so far,
Kagiyan was not hyped, and it was a pretty good place.
Yeah, so far it's on that path. Wendy says, did either of you notice that the clue to the hidden immunity idol that Neil found had a bright blue fabric on the outside, making it really obvious? What's up with that, Sophie? I did not notice that.
I noticed that was that was the first thing I noticed. Was like, it looked like, and also wasn't even really in the tree. It was like kind of sticking out of the tree. I don't know what it was different. It was so bright blue. It was the color of the sky. I mean, I guess maybe they wanted somebody to find at the merge or at the swap things up. I mean, I have to believe that was some kind of weird like production choice, because it was just sticking out of that tree.
Mm. So
yeah,
you think that they tried to, that before they had the swap, they really just tried to, like, nobody's finding the idol here, we need to make this more obvious.
Yes, I think that's what it was.
Okay.
And I think especially with that tribe of like the 222, I think somebody finding an idol, like, it was going to really make things interesting, given there was already another idol there. So,
yeah.
It just pure didn't look like the other idols. Like, you'd watch that scene over again. It's very strange.
We also don't know when Neil found that idol. I mean, the show, like, it was led to believe, okay, that happened day 10 or whatever, right before the swap. But I mean, he could have found that on day 4 for all we know.
Yeah.
All right. Humberto wants to say, did the swap completely screw over the beauties, or can Julia and Michelle recuperate? Pardon my amount of questions, but Sophie is one of the best guests, and it was an intense episode.
Oh my God. I recognize his name. He's like the sweetest.
Yes.
I have people, it's almost like I'm Santa Claus. I feel like I have a good list and a bad list in my head, and I couldn't name them off, but if you gave me a name, I could tell you if they were on the nice or naughty list. And he's definitely a nice list. Yeah.
Sophie Claus.
Present for you. There's like some cat on Survivor Sucks that's an asshole. I don't remember. This was like 5 years ago. I feel like their name was like Mel Z the cat. They were just such a bitch. I remember my dad like took a screenshot of it and was like, people are saying mean things about you. I was like, yes, I know, Dad. You have to screenshot this fucking cat. Anyway, sorry. What was the question? Oh, about the beauty. Are they screwed?
Yeah.
Are they screwed? I don't think so.
Can they rebound? Well, you said that Michelle's your winner pick, so obviously you think that she's going to rebound.
I do think they're going to rebound. Honestly, I think they're going to rebound, and I think they're going to rebound with the Braun guys. I think that the two girls are going to rebound together. I think the two guys, Ty and Nick, are going to flame out some way. I don't know if it's like they try to flip and it doesn't work, or if Nick gets voted out of the merge because he's too strong. But I could see a world in which Julia and Michelle, now that they don't have their like witch's coven of the three of them, kind of like attach themselves to some kind of strong brawn pair, like maybe Scott Jason, and are seen to be like a non-threatening duo, kind of like two cute girls. But between themselves, they have conversation and confessionals about how like they still have this girls alliance going strong and how they plan to kind of resurge. But I almost think that maybe Anna getting voted out was a good thing for them, because it's put them a little bit lower on other people's radar. Instead of being like a strong threesome of girls, they're like two girls who were separated at a swap, who are both cute and like seem non-threatening. Yeah.
Yeah, it always comes back to who's less threatening.
Yeah, it does. And it comes back to this whole thing. I think this is Steven's thing about sometimes like the best way to win Survivor is to lose.
Yeah. Is that the way to go? So start off bad. And again, it's we go back to the intentional Matt Singh.
Yeah.
Go back in. And it's really the best path to the end, because first off, everybody, you're going to get so much screen time in the beginning. Everybody's going to feel bad for you because your team sucks and you're doing bad. But you're just going to dominate the airtime. Everybody loves the underdog. Then you get to the merge or the tribe swap and nobody's targeting you because, who needs to worry? We got bigger fish to fry. You're just sticking around and you're hanging in there. And then you go to the end and you could say, I persevered through so much. And then you get to come back for all-star seasons. It's really the fantastic way to go.
Rob, you don't even have to tell me. You want to know what's better than the intentional Matt Singh?
What's that?
It's
Ozzy just living on Redemption Island and then coming back and winning the fucking game. Yeah. Okay. Like, that is a whole nother level. Like, not only do you not have to vote anybody out, you don't even like participate in the game. You just like sit on the island and eat fish and then you come back and win it. So don't tell me about like how to lose to win, because Ozzy almost perfected that.
Yeah. You potentially saved Survivor that day that you won that final four challenge and got Ozzy. Because what would this show be if somebody could then get voted out three times in a season or two times in a season, then come back and then win the whole game? What would we even talk about on this show?
Rob, you know how many times at Tribal Council I made that exact argument to say that this is not what the show is about? By definition, you are supposed to have to win back the people that you've voted out. And I even argued with Jeff about it. I said, Jeff, you say it every season. Now you have to convince the people that you had a hand in voting out. Like, I'm sorry, you just can't say that, like, that is a winner of Survivor, somebody who just goes and chills on an island. And also wasn't, like, it was even his choice to go there. It's not like he had to go there.
One
and
time
he's
it
like,
was.
Oh, my God.
You saved Survivor.
Honestly, like, yes, I did. I am the Grinch who saved Christmas. I'm the Grinch and Santa Claus today. But, like, seriously, people have said this to me before, and I've been, like, very kind of, modest about it, but like, imagine season 23 with like Coach versus Ozzy in the final. Like, where would we be now?
Where would we be? You did. You saved us from an Ozzy win after being voted off, and Coach being a Survivor winner. Back to back seasons of Boston Rob and Coach having won Survivor.
I mean,
you did that.
You want to know what season 24 would have been had they won? It would have been like Rupert against like Stephanie LaGrosa. Like, you know, this thing would have never ended.
You were the last line of defense.
Yes.
From the show just completely going off the rails. At that point in time, we were close.
I was.
We were on the brink.
Yes.
You saved us, Sophie.
I did. I assume that I am in Jeff's speed dial for that exact reason, should the show ever go down the tank again.
Yeah. And Jeff loves you now.
Yeah, Jeff and I are close. He doesn't know my name, but yeah.
Yes, he does. He does. Sophie, and last thing, Zach Vossler wants to know, please check in with her on the Serial Season 2 struggle. How bad have things gotten? I'm out on Serial 2. I'm out. I didn't even keep up. New episode came out today, I saw.
Oh, did it? I have not listened. I was going to say, I don't think I've listened to one in a long time. They had one good episode, and then I think I told you, I fall asleep in the episodes now. The episodes are shit. I don't know what to say. Like, there's too much good reality TV podcast going on with this whole Donald Trump thing. Like, I don't need to be listening to Serial.
Yeah. But Sophie, they did like three episodes in a row. They're like, okay, we're at the trial. Like, okay, Adnan, we got this whole thing, Asia McClain going on. And they did like three of them, right? And it's like, oh, I gotta get back. I gotta work on Serial Season 2.
Everyone's
like, no, you're fine. You're good. We'll wait. There's no rush.
So bad. It's so bad. God. Yeah. Somebody should make like a one-hit wonder list of podcasts, and that would be there. There'd be a lot of like failed Survivor podcasts too that like interviewed Rupert once and then went out of business.
I think so. I'm calling my shot. Serial Season 3, I think they'll be back. I think they'll figure out. They'll remember like, oh yeah, we need to talk about a murder. They'll be fine. Well, Sophie, you've done it again. Great job. Very fun conversation. And I really do appreciate you coming in here on short notice and really doing a great job.
Thank you for having me. I can't wait to come to one of the live know-it-alls again.
April 13th, you're going to be in town that day?
I might be. Is that a Wednesday?
It's a Wednesday.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Is that New York?
In New York. Caroline's on Broadway. We'll be back.
I want to meet all of the patrons.
Okay, cool. That was so nice.
I want to have a receiving line. I love taking pictures and shaking hands and making small chat.
Yes. Well, everybody knows that about you. And when you see Sophie in person, be sure to thank her for saving Survivor.
Yes. But like maybe do it in a way that like, you know, just like a kind of like a wave.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe just like, what's a signal somebody could give you that is just like, acknowledge, Sophie, you did it.
Nod your head. It'll be more fun. Yeah, like a tip of the hat. Like a virtual
tip of the cap to Sophie.
Exactly.
And she'll know what you mean, and it'll be good.
Yes.
All right, so what's the hashtag, Sophie?
Oh my God, what's the hashtag?
Sophie Claus?
Yeah, I like that.
Okay. She saved the day. All right, and Sophie, thank you so much. You could follow at Sophie G. Clark on Twitter. Anything else you want to tell people to look at or know about?
No, that's it. Yeah, just, you know, follow me on Instagram. Give me the likes. I love the likes.
Okay, those hearts. Yeah, and tell Sophie how clean she looks in pictures.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
All right, I'll send you that MP3, Sophie.
Okay, thank you.
Sophie, thank you so much, okay?
Thank you.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Sophie Clark back here on the podcast. Always fun to catch up with Sophie and talk Survivor. So next up, we're going to do voicemails with Angie Kontz. Looking forward to that and taking your calls about episode number 5 of Survivor Co Wrong. And of course, much, much more coming up in our Survivor week. We will get back into the Wiggle Room with Josh Wiggler coming up this Monday. And then we'll talk about why Anna lost with David Bloomberg coming up on Tuesday on the podcast, and be ready to do it all over again this Wednesday night. So very, very fun stuff. Make sure you don't miss any of the podcasts while subscribing. Thanks to everybody who has become a patron of Rob's podcast. You can find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron at robhasawebsite.com/patron. All right, everybody, looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments, and we'll talk to you soon. Voicemails coming up next. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Ain't nobody quite like she. Sophie looks so clean.
Sophie looks so clean, clean.
Had no time for Jack and Jill. Sophie looks so clean.
Sophie looks so clean, clean.
Doesn't like cereal season 2. Sophie looks so clean.
Sophie looks so clean, clean.
Albert, come here and help me. Sophie looks so clean.
Sophie looks so clean, clean.